Iran just beat us in a straight-up fight.
Good point.
And I know there's going to be people out there that say, no, they didn't. I say, yes, they did. We didn't accomplish any of our objectives. I mean, even Pete Hegseth pounding his chest and saying how he sunk the Iranian Navy. Hey, Pete, Iran just beat two nuclear-armed states at their own game. Okay, they compelled us to seek termination of the conflict. It wasn't Iran that came crawling to America. It was America that went crawling to Egypt, Turkey, and Pakistan saying, please open up an avenue of negotiation so we can bring an end to this thing because it's gone bad for us. We haven't won this war.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we are joined by the one and only Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector, a United States Marine, an intelligence officer, an analyst, and someone who I think demonstrates remarkable and consistent courage in being willing to call out stupidity and incompetence and evil, while also helping us analyze what's happening in the world so we can prepare. So welcome, Mr. Ritter. It's always an honor to have you on the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm a fan of your work, and I've watched so many of your interviews over the last year. It's been a while since you and I have spoken. I'm really glad to have you back on the show. But here we stand at the verge of this clearly sabotaged so-called, you know, ceasefire deal. Israel refuses to take part in anything that would lead to peace. And Trump seems to, in my opinion, getting owned by Iran. But what is your take of where we are right now as we record this on a Thursday? What is it, April 8th or 9th, something like that? What's your take?
My take is that we have lost a war we should never have been involved in. There is no reason, no justification, no, you know, cognizable, you know, legal foundation of what we've done with Iran against Iran. It's an illegal war of aggression. And I always start this way because, you know, I'm an American. I love my country, but my country is a constitutional republic, which means I must adhere to the Constitution. That is the thing that makes me who I am and we who we are. If you don't adhere to the Constitution, you're not an American. You may live in the United States, you may call yourself an American, but with all due respect, you're not an American. The only thing that makes you an American is your adherence to the Constitution, your loyalty to the Constitution, because that's what defines our nation. And so when I start off by talking about an illegal war of aggression, I just want to remind people that that concept came from Judge Jackson, who was later a Supreme Court justice, but was the lead prosecutor at the Nuremberg war crime trials at the end of the Second World War that put Nazi leaders on trial. And he said the greatest war crime of them all is the war of aggression, because from that, all other crimes are committed. The United States went to war against Iraq without any legal justification. People can come at me and say, but I don't care. I don't want to hear a but. That's not how it works under the rule of law.
Right.
You don't get to say, you know, but. No.
We hear that it was justified because some groups chanted death to America, or that years ago, a group they funded, you know, bombed U.S. soldiers in Beirut or what have you. I mean, those are the things that I hear from people. But none of those are legal justification for war in 2026.
They're not moral justifications for war either. I mean, first of all, I hear about, you know, they killed 1,000 Americans, the Iranians. Qasem Soleimani killed 1,000 Americans. Where? I always respond. In Iraq. How far did Americans have to travel to Iraq to be in a position they were killed? And how far did Iranians have to travel to assist the Iraqis killing them?
Right.
We had to travel thousands of miles. The Iranians live right next door. The other thing is, were we invited to Iraq? The answer is no. We were there illegally. Again, another illegal war of aggression. No justification under the rule of law. So we had illegally invaded and occupied a sovereign state, overthrown a legitimate government, with representation at the United Nations, ambassadors here in the United States. I don't care what you think about Saddam Hussein. I really don't care. He was the legitimate leader of Iraq. We recognized him as such. We had diplomatic relations with his government. So take your personal opinions and throw them away because they don't matter. We shouldn't have been in Iraq. And so now to blame the Iranians for supporting Iraqi Shia co-faiths to stand up to people who had invaded and occupied their home. Put yourself in their shoes. Imagine for a moment a foreign occupier in your hometown. You didn't invite them here. They're here. And then reflect hard on how American troops behaved in Iraq. The way we ran up and down the roads, the way we machine gunned anything that looked suspicious, kicking down doors, driving families out of their homes. I think if you did that in this hometown, every single man my age would be trying to kill you because you're the enemy.
Yeah,
you want to take umbrage at the fact that the Iranians helped Iraqi patriots, evict an illegal occupier. So again, that's why I say your moral, I don't care where your morals are, where you feel, if your feelings are hurt. I have two questions to ask. One, did Congress authorize this military operation?
No.
Because Congress is the one. And the answer is no. And two, is this authorized, is this this operation justified under the United Nations Charter? Now, people might, well, Scott, that's international law. That's not really the Constitution now, is it? And I say, really, what about the Supremacy Clause? See, I've taken an oath to the Constitution, and I understand what I took an oath to. When the President of the United States signs a treaty, and the United Nations Charter is a treaty obligation, and it's been ratified by 2/3 or more of the United States Senate, it becomes the supreme law of the land in accordance with the Constitution. So we must adhere and abide by the commitments we made in entering into this treaty relationship. And under the United Nations Charter, there's only two cognizable justifications for going to war. One is you've been attacked, self-defense, Article 51. No, we weren't attacked. There wasn't. We can't even talk about preemptive self-defense. That's something that the president has brought up. But preemptive self-defense under the Caroline Doctrine, again, I hate to bring it up, but it is the Constitution, after all. And the Caroline Affair is a case under the Supreme Court dating back to the 1840s, I guess, when the British intercepted a U.S. ship, the Caroline, that was transferring rebels and equipment to rebels operating north of the Maine border in Canada. And the Brits intercepted the ship, and they made the case that they were authorized to intercept it under the notion of preemption, that the ship posed an imminent threat to the British security and sovereignty, and they had no choice but to intervene. They couldn't wait for the ship to land. The Supreme Court of the United States heard the case and found in favor of the British. And therein comes the concept of the imminent threat, the imminent nature of a threat, which now is what you have to address when you speak of preemptive self-defense. There was no imminent threat from Iran. How do we know? Because we were engaged in negotiations with the Iranians at the time, negotiations which blunt any argument of preeminence because we were addressing the threat. An imminent threat means that it's happening now and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. We attacked them, a surprise attack. We committed a war crime called perfidy. Perfidy is when you raise the white flag of truce and say, come in and let's talk. And while you're talking, you attack them. This is the second time we've done it within a year. We did it in June, and now we did it again. So this is an illegal war of aggression that we're talking about. So that's clearly the first everybody has to understand. There can be no debate, discussion about this. Everything we're doing is illegitimate.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's an excellent explanation. But also there's a presumption among Americans and the American corporate media that Iran has no right of self-defense. For example, when Iran shoots down American aircraft that are engaged in bombing Iran, then we're told from the New York Times or others that shooting down our aircraft is escalation. Things like that, which is just completely absurd. And that, you know, we're told that Iran doesn't have a right to exist. We're told that Iran doesn't have a right to nuclear weapons. Well, determined by who? Determined by who? You know, by the U.S.? But we developed nuclear weapons. It was who gave us the right? I mean, isn't it a natural right for any country to
nuclear weapons? The right of self-defense is a right.
Right of self-defense, exactly.
Yeah, look, we shoot down balloons that fly over our territory. Balloons. We send up F-22 fighters, and they fire multi-million-dollar missiles to shoot down balloons. So when the United States flies a reconnaissance drone and it enters an Iranian airspace, and we know that that reconnaissance drone is collecting intelligence to facilitate future targeting of Iran, Iran has a right to shoot that down. No ifs, ands, or buts. They have an inherent right of self-defense. Nuclear weapons, is non-negotiable. Iran's not allowed to have nuclear weapons because Iran signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty as a non-nuclear weapon state. So in signing the treaty, they said, we will not seek to acquire nuclear weapons. But in doing so under Article 4, now they are authorized to have the totality of the nuclear fuel cycle for peaceful purposes. That means they're allowed to enrich uranium. They're allowed to, you know, convert uranium feedstock into, to raw uranium into feedstock that can be enriched. They're allowed to have nuclear reactors and make fuel for nuclear reactors. They're even allowed to reprocess the fuel as long as it's done under international safeguard inspections. But they can't have nuclear weapons.
Well, but hold on, Scott. I want to push back on that a little bit here because, number one, Israel has not signed the non-proliferation treaty, correct? The United States has, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep.
But the United States has already violated its own signature of that by providing nuclear weapons technology to Israel, which means the United States has broken the good faith agreement of that, the entire protocol, the structure of that agreement. So why should...
Haven't admitted that.
Well, okay, that's right. Haven't admitted it. So lying about not breaking the NPT. But why should Iran honor an agreement that they made in good faith with countries that are operating in bad faith in deception in order to violate the spirit of that?
The United States, and it didn't make an agreement with Israel. Iran made an agreement with the international community. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is an international treaty, so it's Iran's commitment to the world.
Okay.
Iran, you don't get to say, because you're cheating, I get to cheat. That doesn't operate anywhere in the legal profession. I don't get to say, hey, because Donald Trump cheated on his income taxes and has never been called out on it, hell, I get to cheat too, and you can't call me out on it. No, if I cheat on my taxes, IRS comes in and puts me in jail.
But there is a legal premise for contract fraud and misrepresentation,
That's an American issue, not an Iranian issue.
Uh-huh.
The Iranians don't get to claim anything based upon America's behavior. Iran must adhere to its obligations. If it doesn't want to adhere to its obligations, then Iran can withdraw from the NPT.
Okay.
North Korea did.
Do you think that they would do that?
No. Why would they?
I'm wondering.
At the very beginning, that it doesn't want a nuclear bomb. It doesn't need a nuclear bomb. A nuclear bomb would actually be bad for it. And they've proven their point. Iran just beat us in a straight up fight.
Good point.
And I know there's going to be people out there that say, no, they didn't. I say, yes, they did. We didn't accomplish any of our objectives. I mean, even Pete Hegseth pounding his chest and saying how he sunk the Iranian Navy. Hey, Pete, it was Iranian Navy ships that just put mines in the Strait of Hormuz, shutting it down. You sunk big ships. You didn't destroy capability because the Iranians know what they're doing here. But Iran just beat two nuclear armed states at their own game. Okay, they compelled us to seek termination of the conflict. It wasn't Iran that came crawling to America. It was America that went crawling to Egypt, Turkey, and Pakistan saying, please open up an avenue of negotiation so we can bring an end to this thing because it's gone bad for us. We haven't won this war. Now, I know, we have the spinmeisters out there pretending we won the war, but the reality is we didn't collapse the regime. That was a stated objective, regime change. Now, Trump can say we have a new regime in place. We don't. It's the same president, the same foreign minister.
That's right. Trump is just talking BS there.
It's the same system. I mean, they have a supreme leader, and the Constitution of the Islamic Republic still, reigns supreme. The regime is in place. We didn't suppress their ballistic missile capabilities. They're still able to launch missiles and hit targets. They blew the crap out of our facilities, and we didn't accomplish anything. We desperately tried to do a raid on the Isfahan nuclear facility, and that turned into a Desert One debacle. Thank God we didn't leave any dead people on the desert, but, and we can't secure the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, the bottom line is the military has had to tell the president, we can't free the Strait of Hormuz. We can't secure it. Iran has it, and there's nothing we can do to stop them.
Let's talk about the Strait there. Again, sorry to interrupt, but I'm getting your point. I think you're absolutely correct that actually control over the Strait is more powerful than any nuclear weapon because
It is.
Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, so control over the strait, which is clearly in the hands of Iran, and as you said, there was additional mining of the southern portion of that strait now, which forces ships to sail right next to Iran's total control, and yet I've seen so many whoever's left in MAGA and Trump people claiming that, you know, like Trump screaming in his social media posts saying Iran must open it immediately, and it's like, okay, it's just words. That doesn't do anything. You can say all the words you want, but Iran still controls the strait. And that means they control the backbone of the energy of planet Earth, period.
No, this is why Trump is desperate for a solution right now, because this is humiliating the United States. We have been operating in the Gulf since the time of Jimmy Carter, when the Carter Doctrine was first formulated, that said, in exchange for oil producing countries of the region to, allow the interests of the United States to dominate their energy production, policies, we will secure them. We will provide security guarantees. They will subordinate themselves to us. We will make sure that they are safe. We have said we can keep the Strait of Hormuz open. It's long been recognized as a strategic choke point. If people need go back in 1987 on Operation Earnest Will, where the U.S. Navy reflagged the Kuwaiti tanker fleet and escorted it through the Strait of Hormuz to keep it from being hit by Iraq and by Iran. And we could do it at the time, but the Iranians watched and learned, and they now have developed the capabilities to shut that down. And we don't have anything that can keep it open. Our Navy can't do it. Our Air Force can't do it. We don't have sufficient ground power to do it. So the Iranians own this. It is theirs, and they have declared it is ours. And if they shut it down and continue to shut it down, this is going to cause permanent economic damage around the world. I mean, Europe is about to be hit with an energy crisis that it's not going to recover from. Asia, you're looking at the potential for real economic harm, to include China. That's why China has intervened, actually, and put pressure on Iran to come to the table. Iran didn't want to come to the table. They're winning this war. I mean, they're like, keep bombing us. We don't care. You're not destroying us. You're not breaking our will. We're destroying you. We're humiliating you. But the Iranians were told by the Chinese that China needs this oil to start flowing because, a significant part of their energy comes from the Middle East, comes from, those countries who can't ship their oil now because of the closure. So China told the Iranians they have to sit down and talk with the Americans. And so the Iranians agreed.
But you said in previous interviews, and I agree with you, that the U.S., and I'm paraphrasing, but the U.S. really can't be negotiated with because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the problem is, the U.S. will murder the negotiators or will use it, as you said, perfidy, as an excuse to launch an attack. And so, and numerous Iranian officials have said that we cannot negotiate with the United States of America because the people that are serving in that role, Witkoff and Kushner, et cetera, are not trustworthy. They're not operating in good faith, and they never keep their word. So my question to you, Scott, first of all, feel free to correct me if I've said anything incorrect there, but how does there ever become a diplomatic solution to this?
Because there has to be an alternative to war. That's just the fact that the Iranians despise Witkoff and Kushner is irrelevant. I mean, because at the end of the day, the United States and Iran are going to have to come to some sort of agreement. Iran has some leverage now. They may insist that they need somebody other than Kushner and Witkoff to be present, or at least to conclude, meaning somebody like J.D. Vance will have to be involved. But there will also have to be other agreements that Iran will no longer trust an executive order like the JCPOA,
right,
which Trump pulled from. So there will have to be, a binding international agreement with security guarantees. And, the United States will have to, have increased diplomatic exposure for, you know, any withdrawal. For instance, you know, they're going to have to make agreements with Russia and China and regional powers, et cetera. You know, this isn't going to be a very simple thing. It's going to be a very complicated, you know, agreement, peace agreement. You know, in the United States is going to have to give up all leverage of control it had over Iran. For instance, it doesn't matter if Kushner or Witkoff are there. What matters is that the sanctions are lifted. What matters is that the Security Council terminates all resolutions, because once you terminate those resolutions, you can't go back. Right now, the United States has resolutions on the book against Iran from the Security Council back when China and Russia were playing, you know, the game. But now Russia and China aren't playing the game. So once you wipe the slate clean, you're never going to get another Security Council resolution against Iran, because Russia and China will veto it. The same thing at the board of directors of the IAEA, wipe the slate clean. So Iran is going to come out of this with its economy fully under its control, unrestricted right to sell oil at fair market value. This is what the Iranians care about. They don't care about Jared Kushner. They don't care about Steve Witkoff. They don't trust the United States at all. But what they want is, you know, the lifting of sanctions and the international community rallying around their cause. So that if the United States wants to do anything, it has to do it unilaterally. Right now, the United States is right under a facade of, you know, international law. But that will end.
Well, I really appreciate the detail in the description that you just gave. And I think you're absolutely correct in that the critical component here is the lifting of sanctions, because Iran has been under these economic sanctions for decades that have really hampered its ability to naturally grow and innovate. And yet it's still done well despite the sanctions. However, so 2 points here, Scott. One is that the process that you just described of the you know, multilateral involving other nations guarantees of this agreement, that process, including the unwinding of sanctions, is a multi-month process, as you, well, you know better than most, because you lived a lot of this, right? That's a multi-month process. And secondly, I don't think that Trump will ever agree to lifting sanctions, because he will always be pressured by Netanyahu, at least in my assessment. So two-part question to you. One is, the Strait of Hormuz would obviously stay closed during this entire process of putting together this agreement. That alone would cause severe global economic damage to the parties that you just accurately mentioned, such as Asia and Europe, et cetera. But at the end of the day, I don't see the U.S. ever agreeing to lifting sanctions on Iran. How does that ever happen, in your view?
Well, first of all, it won't be a multi-month. It can happen instantaneously. The United States simply nullifies its sanctions, then goes to the Security Council with the Russians and the Chinese and passes a resolution that nullifies all the UN things, and then goes to the IAEA and passes that. It can be done in a week.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. There's just absolutely.
If they want to.
Correct. But yeah. The Strait of Hormuz is being choked up. Trump right. Trump is in trouble right now. That's what people need to understand. You know, he is watching. Donald Trump is an egomaniac. I hope people will understand. He's a narcissist. You know, we don't have the standard presidency. We have a cult of personality, and it's all driven around Donald Trump. He doesn't care about the American people. I hope that's been recognized by those who claim to support him. He doesn't put America first. He doesn't even put Israel first. I know that's a cute little slogan that's put out there. He puts Donald Trump first. That's all he cares about.
That's true.
That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that means that his center of gravity, if we're trying to define what it is, you know, isn't the national security of the United States. He doesn't care about Iran's nuclear program. He doesn't even know what it is. You know, he's just been told to care about it. He cares about Donald Trump, and he cares about his legacy. He wants to go down in history as the greatest president that ever walked the face of the earth. And he's been telling us all along how great he is. And, you know, it's hard sometimes to, you know, get past the loyalists, the MAGA base, who are just blind to everything because they've bought into the cult of personality. I mean, they are living manifestations of everything that James Madison warned us about back when, you know, the Federalist Papers were written. Factionalism, the danger of factionalism, and how it can lead to a breakdown of checks and balances and the promotion of the tyranny of the executive. Well, that's what's happened here. We have a president who doesn't care about the Constitution, openly says so, says he's a dictator, said that at Davos openly, says that the rule of law doesn't matter, only his sense of morality matters, ignores Congress, ignores the Supreme Court. I mean, this isn't an American president. This is an American dictator. But the good news is we still have elections for the moment. And in November, there's a midterm election. President Trump understands one of the reasons why he's pushing for a ceasefire right now is that this war is potentially fatal to his legacy. He promised his base that he would not go to wars like this. He said, I will not do this. And yet now he's done it. And he can't say he did it to get rid of Iran's nuclear program because it's still there and they're not going to give it up. He can't say he did it to get rid of the ballistic missile program because it's still there and they're not going to give it up. So he's going to have to come up with some sort of spin. And that spin may be related to peace. He did what nobody else could do. He had to go to war to break the paradigm. Now he's able to construct the framework of peace. I'm the greatest peacemaker. Give me the Nobel Peace Prize, et cetera, et cetera. However he spins this. But if he doesn't spin it properly, the Democrats are going to take the House in November. And that's the end of the Trump presidency right there. It's over because they will impeach him over and over and over again. I would anticipate that, if they don't convict him, there will be at least four successful impeachments, meaning that he will impeach and be put on trial four times between November, between January when the new Congress comes in and the time his term ends up. Four times.
Oh, yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that.
And that paralyzes the presidency and nothing gets done. It's over. The worst thing that can happen for him is that he loses the Senate and he irritates people enough to where they impeach and they convict.
Yeah.
And now it's a whole different ballgame for Trump. And this is a realistic proposition right now. This is not out of the blue. And Trump is in a panic, a sheer panic. His staff, his advisors are in a panic. J.D. Vance is looking at what was a sure thing into being that he may also get in legal trouble. So Donald Trump isn't going to play stupid games right now. He's not going to sit there and drag this thing out. This has to be resolved quickly. It has to be resolved decisively. And it has to be resolved in a manner which allows Donald Trump to spin it in a somewhat positive step. Iran isn't going to cave in. They're not going to give in to his demands. He's going to have to adjust to them. They're not going to adjust to him. And so that's why I the Strait of Hormuz, the fact that the Iranians control it and aren't going to relinquish it, this is the death grip for this president, because as the global economy starts to collapse, everybody will blame it on Trump. And then you're going to see everything collapse. We're about to see NATO collapse. Now, some people support it. I do as well. But if it collapses in a vacuum, meaning that it happened because of incompetence, it's not a planned collapse. We drop buildings, with planned explosions. We blow down, they come, implosions. That's good. We wanted to do it. But if you're in downtown Albany and a building just falls out of the blue, that's bad. That's unplanned. That shouldn't have happened. Right now we're seeing the collapse of everything. I call it the empire terminating event. We're seeing NATO collapse. We're seeing relationships in the Pacific collapse. I mean, Japan and South Korea, we just stripped away their air defense without even coordinating with them. What kind of ally does that? And now, because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, they're going into energy rationing. What kind of ally does that? Their economies are going to collapse. What kind of ally does that? The world is going to be turning away from the United States because we're literally the worst thing in the world. You talk about the Midas touch. Donald Trump, he loves that gold. I mean, you just take a look at the White House. It's all gold. His toilets are gold. Everything's gold. The Midas touch, whatever he touches is gold. But you know that the Midas touch isn't a blessing. It's a curse because everything you touch turns to gold, which means it dies. And Donald Trump is touching our friends and our allies, and they're dying. They're losing. This man is a curse on the world, and he will lose the election because of this decisively. There will be a collapse of support for Donald Trump in the United States if he doesn't change the trajectory of what's happening in the Middle East right now.
All right. right, Scott. Well said. I think your analysis is right on track with where things are headed right now, although possibly Trump could reverse course at some point here. But I don't hear him listening to the American people at all or listening to reason. Let me give out your website. ScottRitter.com will take you to Scott's Substack page, which is filled with many, many interviews and analysis, articles and pieces there. And Scott is one of the most prolific interviewees on YouTube and other platforms as well. You do so much work, Scott, and it's greatly appreciated. And Scott, please stand by because we're gonna do another interview with you here. So this is part one of the interview with Scott Ritter. You can find part two at brightvideos.com. And in part two, we're gonna talk about the global reformulation of power that Scott just alluded to there. So what happens, what does the world look like when the U.S. is weakened, the empire's peak days are over, and Iran becomes essentially a superpower by controlling about 20% of the world's energy and other important products like helium and sulfuric acid, etc. We'll cover that in part two with Scott Ritter. So until then, thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams with brightvideos.com. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my site here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.